Greetings, horror fans, and welcome to episode 213 of Frightmares. I am your host, Austin Proctor, and joining me across the table for the first time in what feels like ages is Corey Johnson.
Heyo!
I love it. It's been a minute. Oh, okay. Okay.
It's been long enough of a minute that your computer went to sleep.
I think we're getting infiltrated by ghosts here. There we go. That was weird. Okay, we're here. Yes. It's been a minute since you've been on the show. Glad to have you back. When was the last time you were here? Was it for Diversity Month? For fucking Satan Slaves back in April?
Yeah.
Holy shit. Well, I know you were supposed to do Friday the 13th, but I know job got in the way. Understandable.
Yeah, I got a new job, actually. Yeah.
A new job?
Well, no, I'm at the new dispensary as a manager.
Yes, okay.
Yeah.
So
much better.
So much better than Murph Murnerpner, place that will not be named.
Because I signed an NDA and they'll fucking sue me.
That's so crazy. If a job gave me an NDA to sign, I'd be like, I don't know.
And it's
And
it's in the onboarding paperwork, too.
Oh, wow.
It's like, not even after you're hired. It's like, you have to sign this to get hired.
Did you have to sign one of these for your new job?
No.
Sketchy. Well, no, not that sketchy. Other place sketchy for making you do that. Yeah.
100%. So,
neither here nor there. You're here now. We're doing a movie called Pulse from 2001. Not to be confused with apparently the 2006 remake that
of American remake.
Yeah, with Kristen Bell that I had no fucking clue was even a thing until I was looking at the trivia and I was like, oh, of course we remade this.
I am almost positive that I saw the American remake before this one on a double feature with fucking, Urban Legend.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and I've got some more information about the Pulse franchise, apparently, that America did. We'll get to that later. But yeah, so what's going on, dude? It's been so long.
It's just been life, man.
Yeah.
Life. I did get to see at least one new movie.
Okay. We'll talk about that.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that.
Outside of that, I mean, it's just been living life, working. I work like two doubles a week at the moment, so I be in the shop a lot.
Yeah. All right. One of these days I'll get my medical card and come visit you. One of these days. God damn. So lazy. Well, also baby too. Baby takes up about 79% of my time, and then work takes up about 21%. So I'm left with zero at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So it's a good time.
Now the baby takes up the income.
Yeah. Oh my God. So expensive. Let's get into some horror news. If I could fucking speak, I get too excited because Corey is here and we're gonna get rambunctious.
I've got rowdy.
As
the Wu-Tang Clan would say, bring the ruckus.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, quoting Wu-Tang. All right, I can get down with that.
I've been doing this thing where I've just been like finding an artist, doesn't matter what, and I've just been listening to one. A random album of theirs all the way through.
Oh.
And I've been stuck a lot on the Wu-Tang recently.
It's pretty easy to get stuck.
Yeah, it's good.
I love it. See, I'm a very much like a listen to a full album kind of guy. Gabby will just put her fucking entire library on shuffle. It makes me crazy. How do you live like that?
So now I do that at work.
Okay.
Just because
different at worst.
So another artist that I listen to albums through unironically, because I truly do in my heart of hearts love this band. Mm-hmm. I listen to Smash Mouth like a motherfucker.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do. Yes, the fuck I do. I love Smash Mouth. And I don't care what anybody says.
I love it.
But nobody wants to listen to 1999's Astro Lounge all the way through, except for me.
The name drop is killing me.
And the year.
Oh, I remember that. I remember that coming out. I was 9 years old. Going to pick that up from Best Buy or wherever the fuck. Good God.
And it still fucking slaps.
From beginning to end.
Yes. From beginning to end. It's cohesive. It's melodically fantastic.
Oh my God.
The energy is just so good. And I would say the best songs they've ever put out were on Astro Lounge.
All those fucking hits you heard from Shrek and all the movies in the 2000s. Early 2000s, obviously. Oh, man.
Actually, two of the songs from the Shrek soundtrack didn't even come from Astro Lounge. They came from the album before.
Rockstar's not on that one?
No.
Really?
No, that's Fu Manchu.
Oh, shit. Okay. Wow. Okay. I've got to revisit those.
And then their cover of I'm a Believer is on their previous album as well.
Oh, wow. How many fucking albums do they have?
4.
Wow.
But their first two albums, they were not the dad reggae surf band. They were hardcore punk.
What?
Yes.
Okay.
Smash Mouth used to be hardcore punk until their second album. When they weren't making a ton of money, and then they decided to change up their sound.
And then they blew the fuck up. They did. They did those.
Welcome to Frightmares today on the Smash Mouth deep dive.
It's gonna be Pulse semicolon fucking Smash Mouth deep dive. Oh my goodness. All right, let's get back on track here. That was great, though. This only happens with you. All this random, crazy knowledge. Oh, my God. Horror news. Here we go. I've got 5 things for you. A weekend getaway gets gory in a movie called Bad Things coming out this year. This is the second feature from Stuart Thorndike, who also did Lyle from 2014, starring Gail Rankin from Glow, Annabelle Dexter-Jones from Under the Silver Lake, and Barbie's Harineff, and also 80s icon Molly Ringwald. Bad Things has been described by director Thorndike as the second film in a trilogy about the power of motherhood, and a film in which instead of seeing bad things being done to women, we see women doing bad things. Here's the full plot synopsis. When a group of friends escape the city to spend the weekend in an abandoned hotel, a pervading, eerie energy begins to illuminate the cracks in their little family unit. Ruthie Nod, played by Rankin, inherits the hotel from her grandmother, and with bad childhood memories threatening to burst through the surface, Ruthie wants to sell the hotel and never return. But her partner, Cal, played by Neff, drags her there in hopes of returning it to its former glory. They are joined by their amiable friend, Maddie, and mysterious grifter Fran, Dexter Jones, whose unhinged seduction threatens to dive a wedge between the couple. As the friends dance, cook, flirt, and fight up and down the halls of the hotel, they begin to find themselves indelibly entwined in the hotel's seductive embrace and start to do bad things to each other. Bad Things, 2023.
I mean, sounds interesting.
If I could read it like, cohesively, it'd probably sound a lot better, but there's too many fucking dumb words in there and I trip over my shit. But yeah, I mean, I'm down for it. If anyone's ever seen Lyle from 2014, it's pretty good. I gave it a 3.5 out of 5. I do believe it is on Shudder, but I'm all for like women empowerment and also like women doing crazy things in movies or women doing bad things instead of bad things being done to women. This also kind of vibes like, in a way, it almost vibes like Followed because they're going to a hotel. Obviously, in Followed, they were they were going to a hotel for like to ghost hunt. They're going to this hotel, and because you know someone owns it, but they start to do bad things once they're there.
I also get a little bit of what was that movie that we reviewed like 10 million years ago? Havenhurst. I was getting a little bit of that vibe from it, like sort of. It's the hotel brings the bad out in you type shit.
Right.
Whatever evil spirit. Whatever, yeah.
I think in Havenhurst, there was a serial killer that lived there.
Yeah, no. Yeah. It was the like great-granddaughter of H.H. Holmes.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was that. And it was based on H.H. Holmes and how, you know, a bunch of people died there. So this sounds fun. I've seen the trailer for it. You can go check out the trailer on YouTube. There's also an IMDb page up for it. And there is, you know, poster cards and all that shit. So you can go check it out. It's called Bad Things. I do believe it will be releasing sometime later this year. It is marked for 2023 and it's only August. It's August 3rd right now. So we only have about 4 more months in the year, but it should be releasing at some point between now and December. So good news for all you horror fans, because they're honestly, this year's been lacking for me at least. I only have 23 movies on my newly watched for this year list.
I have 2.
Oh, shit. How are you going to do a top 10, Corey?
Bro, I don't know. I mean, it's August. I got time.
I'll send you the list that I have.
I'm also trying to find some, like, more out-of-the-way new releases. Like, there's one on Amazon that I saw called Malum that I'd never heard of before.
Wait, it's on Prime?
I think so.
Ooh,
I think it was.
So that
I saw an ad for it coming to Prime
soon. So, do you know The Last Shift? Have you ever heard of that one?
Yes.
It's the same director?
Oh, it's on Prime for $3.99.
Okay, yeah. Okay, so that's the same director, and it's a remake. Doesn't make sense.
Well, I mean, okay, that's fair because there were a lot of people that had some qualms with Last Shift, and how it was kind of hokey. Yeah. This is a little hokey.
Well, yeah.
I mean, but that's what I liked about it is because it was it's kind of campy. It's very like
it's very low. I mean, it's very indie, low budget. Yeah,
it's what you would expect from that cover.
Exactly. And so I don't think I've ever seen a director like remake his own movie, but I mean, besides like maybe John Carpenter, you know, he's been involved in like,
but he
didn't like direct any other ones. So yeah, it's very interesting to see. Okay. So $3.99, that's good. Cause last time I checked, it was like $9.99 and I was like, let me wait till it drops a little bit or till it's free. Cause you know,
and then there were a couple other things that were like new, but obviously had like no marketing behind it that looked interesting. I don't remember the titles at the moment, but that's what I'm thinking I'm kind of doing this go around. Just cause like my partner and I don't get out as much just cause like where she lives is expensive and it's expensive to live there.
Yeah.
So I mean, we spend a lot of our time in now and like
fair.
we just cook and watch movies and like her thing is competition shows right now.
Oh yeah. Okay.
So we've been doing a lot of that.
Dude, existing in Florida is expensive.
Oh, yeah, it's so bad.
It's so bad. And speaking of existing and things that are streaming, if you'd like to check out the Insidious Red Door, it's now streaming, but, you know, it's a $19.99 rental on Amazon because it just came out, like, 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, but I mean, if you're going to be watching it with, like, some other person, $19.99, still less than two movie tickets.
Oh, and popcorn and soda.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, 100. So, well, fuck that. I bring that in myself.
Well, yeah, I bring candy in myself. So Insidious the Red Door is streaming.
Oh, no, I'll bring popcorn, like, MRE that shit.
Oh, my God.
Pop it in-house.
People are just in the theater. It's like, like, it's fine, guys.
I'm sitting in the back, and all you hear is...
Yes. It's part of the trailers, guys. Fuck off. So The Red Door is streaming on Vudu as of today. You can also buy all five movies. There's a five-movie collection on Vudu for $39.99, which is actually pretty fucking solid. It has made a killing at the box office, $32.6 million domestic opening weekend, making it the second biggest opening for an Insidious film behind 2013's Insidious Chapter 2. As of right now, according to IMDb, it has grossed $175 million globally. So for a $16 million budget, that is what we like to call a home fucking run.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
They are definitely going to be making more of these movies.
Yeah. I mean, I am not the hugest fan of any of them outside of Insidious, the first one.
One and two, honestly.
I mean, number two at least is on par with one, but it was nothing original, which is why I score it just slight bit lower. But then they just fucking ran off with it, and I was like, guys, like, what are you doing?
Three was good in the sense that it was very creepy. Story-wise, it wasn't great. The ending wasn't great, but, like, there were a lot of good scares.
Well, and see, but...
And then four, I'm sorry, Last Key was just bad.
And see, unfortunately for me, like, Insidious is one of those movies where the story fucking hooked me.
Yeah.
And when you deviate too far from that story that made it interesting, I don't want it no more.
Yeah, that's why one and two are really the best two, because three is a prequel that goes in front of one and two. And then four, I can't even remember where four fucking stands. But Adam Robitaille, I love you. You're a great filmmaker. But you got thrown into a franchise four movies in that you had nothing to do with prior to. So, like, I get it. Like, I understand. But, yeah, Last Key, I don't even know where in the timeline it stands. And then this one...
I think Last Key was a pre-prequel.
I think it was, too. And then I know this one takes place definitely after 1 and 2, because Dalton's all grown up in this one. It's the same actor. It's been 10 years since the first one. Yeah. So this one at least is, like, going beyond what we know instead of prequeling all this shit. But if you'd like to check it out, $19.99 on Amazon. I don't know how much it is on Vudu, but I assume it's probably around the same price. And if you want to buy all five of them, $39.99 for five movies, that's like $8 a piece. Not too shabby.
Still less than two movie tickets.
Still less than two movie tickets. So, weirdly enough, the director of Scream 7 is changing because Radio Silence, otherwise known as Matt Bettelini Open and Tyler Gillette, that's hard to say back to back, they are Radio Silence and they did Scream 5 and 6, amongst many other things. But apparently... they're going to be doing a untitled monster movie for Universal. So basically, if they were to do Scream 7, that would mean hitting the pause button on the franchise next installment. And Paramount's like, let's not do that. So they're bringing in someone else to direct Scream 7, which I'm happy with, but I'm also irritated with because it's Chris Landon. I love Chris Landon. He's done Freaky. He's done Happy Death Day. Great director. I love him, but I don't like the fact that they're changing directors on the third movie in a trilogy. It just, that never works out.
No.
That never worked. No matter how good the director is, no matter how much I love his previous work, when you have a trilogy and you do one and two with one, and then like it's Star Wars all over again with J.J. Abrams and Rian Johnson. J.J. Abrams set up a great fucking thing. Rian Johnson came in, retconned everything, and then J.J. came back to retcon the retcons. And it's just like, so, I mean, I hope that he just takes what they've already done and rolls with it and continues the same story. But I'm also very worried that he's going to, I don't know. I just feel like he's going to go wild and do other things.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just don't like when they change directors this far into a trilogy. It makes me upset. Although, like I said, I do love Chris Landon. He does a lot of good work. So I am optimistic to a certain level. But it's, you know, I mean, obviously they're probably going to make more past 7. I don't think the franchise is dying at 7. I didn't think they were going to make 5, 6, or 7.
I mean, so I think what's going to end up happening is Scream, especially because of the whole MTV series that happened for whatever number of years it happened.
Like, I think it's still going on.
It's like 6 or 7 seasons or something ridiculous. Oh my God. I think Scream is just going to be that kind of franchise that's just going to get remolded for whatever fucking generation is up next.
Yeah. I mean, I'm okay with it. Okay, okay. There's 3 seasons of the Scream TV show, and then that's it. 2015 to 2019. 1, 2, and 3. I really thought that was like 4 or 5.
Yeah, so... Who knows?
All right. Well, yeah, I don't know. It's like, I said, I didn't expect them to do 5. I didn't even expect them to do 6. And I surely didn't fucking expect them to do 7. I thought they would be like, oh, 5 and 6 were done. And then they were like, oh, we're doing another one. And it's just like, okay, this franchise is great. I love this franchise. It's very consistent with numbers, ratings, and how much they bring in the box office. But like, there is going to be a point where you're going to fucking run this shit dry.
Oh, yeah.
You can't keep this going this good forever. And I need them to just cut it after this one. Just be done. At least for like another, I don't know, 10 years. Because we had Scream 4 in 2011. And then we had this, you know, Scream 5, you know, like 11 years later. So just do this one. Cut it for a while. Let these 3 movies breathe for a little bit. And they're usually pretty good at that. But I'm just very scared at why. I mean, I'm excited for Radio Silence's Untitled Monster movie.
I'm always excited for a new monster, except for the Meg. I don't care for shark movies.
That's a
me thing.
Yeah, that's a you thing. Yeah, and I even watched the Meg, the first one for the first time the other day, and it was dumb, but it was fun. Like it was like dumb fun, you know. So I enjoyed it, but it's not like a good movie. You know what I mean? And if you'd like to go see the Meg 2, that is currently out now, I think, or coming out this weekend.
I think it's like coming out.
I think it's coming out Friday. So by the time this is released, it'll have been out for the weekend. But I'm pretty sure the Meg comes out tomorrow in theaters. If not, they're doing an early release tonight. But yeah, so I don't know. We'll see what happens with Scream 7. Again, I'm optimistic, but I'm also very scared because I don't like when they just change directors at the last minute. But this is a major like production. You know what I mean? Scream is very much a... what's the word I'm looking for? Not indie, but oh my God. Well, what's the word I'm looking for?
Cult classic?
Christ. No. It's like the, God damn it. Holy shit. Why can I not think of the fucking word? It is a fucking studio movie. Jesus Christ. It is very much like a big studio movie. So I don't think.
Oh, like a blockbuster.
Yeah. Well, I'm saying like the studio is very involved with these movies.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
So I don't think that they'll let him go too rogue. I think it's more of just like, hey, we've already got the script, come in and just direct it.
Also, out of all of the like horror sub communities, the Scream community is some of the most vitriolic of all of them. Like, if there's something about Scream that they don't like, they're shouting it from the rooftops.
Yeah, a lot of people who didn't like 5 love 6 and vice versa. Like, I loved 5, did not like 6. I thought it was okay. So Scream fans are very divided and it's a weird mix of people. It's a weird mix. So we'll see what happens, but that'll be coming out sometime later next year, I assume. It's definitely not coming out this year because we already had Scream 6 in March. So keep on the lookout for that. I think this, I'll get two more here real quick. This one's a real quick one. It's just that Saw X is going to be the longest Saw movie ever made. If you're looking forward to Saw X like I am, you know that it's usually about 90 minutes. The longest one in the franchise is Saw 3, and that comes in at an hour and 48 minutes. So, as the filmmaker explained...
That's like my favorite Saw, too.
Yeah,
that's it goes like 1, 3, 2, and then 4 for me.
3 is like the unsung hero. The only reason 1 is in front of 3 for me is because we wouldn't have 3 if it wasn't for 1.
Yeah.
So I have to throw respect to the first one, but 3 is my second favorite. It is literally such a strong entry in the Saw franchise. So Kevin Grueter was explaining that he's like, these movies don't linger. Most of them have been in the hour and a half range. So pushing 2 hours would be quite a bit more time with Jigsaw than audiences are accustomed to. But again, they're not going to waste your time in these Saw movies.
Yeah.
There is no time wasted in Saw movies. Like if you've ever seen a Saw movie, there's no like, oh, this is dragging. Like it's pretty much just like boom, 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 trap, trap, trap.
If anything, it's like, I could use a little less of this
I could dull it down just a skosh.
I could shave like 15 seconds off of every one of these torture sequences.
And I'd be fine. But yeah, so just know that it will be the longest Saw movie ever made. I don't anticipate it pushing 2 hours. I'm probably thinking like hour 55. You know, nothing too much longer than an hour 48, but... I'm excited because I, you know, everyone knows I'm a huge Saw fan. So now that I know that this is going to be the longest one. Also, it's directed by Kevin Grueter. He edited 1 through 5, directed 6 and 7, coming back for this one. So it's staying in the family. It's also the same producers as like the original movies. Berg, Hoffman has passed away, and Coles. So it's like the same producer. And of course, you know, fucking Juan is producing as well. So I'm very excited that this is staying in the family and it's going to be a good time. At least from the trailer, it looks good. So last but not least, there are rumors. Do not take this as this is happening. But according to a recent report at World of Real, Maggie Gyllenhaal is remaking 1935's Bride of Frankenstein for Netflix. If this is accurate, The Bride will be Gyllenhaal's second feature film as a director following 2021 psychological drama, The Lost Daughter. I didn't even know she was directing shit. So.
Yeah, neither did I.
So this is news to me.
Also, way to fumble the bag and take it to Netflix.
I mean, Del Toro is doing a Frankenstein movie for Netflix, so...
Yeah, okay, but here's the thing, though.
And Netflix has been stepping it up lately.
That's Del Toro. Mm-hmm. That's not Netflix, because Del Toro comes with... I'm Del Toro.
Yeah, and he also did the Cabinet of Curiosities, which was fucking bangers.
And he went into that saying, this is mine, and you will not tell me what to do.
Yeah. yeah, I know.
Literally everything else that comes with, like, new projects with Netflix, though, is Netflix wants some hand in it, and it gets fumbled big time.
I don't know. They've been knocking it out of the park lately with their material that they have and what they have to offer. They have been honestly stepping it up because they know they need to.
Yeah, that's true.
I've been going through Netflix lately like, oh, this movie's on there? Oh, that movie's on there? Like, holy shit. So maybe they'll learn their lesson and just let people fucking direct. But World of Real also reports that Gyllenhaal's former The Dark Knight co-star Christian Bale will headline the film. We assume this means he will play Dr. Frankenstein rather than the monster or the bride, obviously. But then again, who knows? Bale's always up for an unusual acting challenge. World of Real's report only notes that the film is set to begin production sometime next year. At present, we don't know who else might appear in the film, what time period Gyllenhaal's The Bride will be set in, or when it will arrive. In all likelihood, it will be a while before we hear anything further on this one, but that is quite interesting to think of Christian Bale and Maggie Gyllenhaal doing a Bride of Frankenstein movie, because to my knowledge, there has not been an actual remake specifically of Bride of Frankenstein. I mean, there's been like Bride of Reanimator, Bride of Chucky, but I don't think there's been, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, by all means, but like an actual Bride of Frankenstein remake? I don't think so. We've had Frankenstein remade plenty of times, but I don't know. I mean, we need one at this point because Bride of Frankenstein, I'm sorry, it fucking sucked. The Bride of Frankenstein was in 10 seconds of the fucking movie and they screamed at each other and then she like was like, I don't want to be with you. And Frankenstein was like, oh, I was like, oh, okay. So for a movie called Bride of Frankenstein, it was very lacking on the bride part of the movie. Just saying. Spoiler alert, but you know, whatever. Fucking movie's almost 100 years old. Get fucked. Oh, what was the movie you wanted to talk about?
Oh,
I didn't want to forget.
Beau's Afraid.
Oh, okay.
That movie, have you talked about it on the podcast?
I have not talked about it yet. It is in my other room. I have bought it.
It's fucking weird.
Are we surprised?
I honestly, yes.
Really?
So Hereditary is one thing. Midsommar is another thing. As my girlfriend has said, this barely counts as a movie. The only reason it is a movie is because it is on film.
Yeah.
Outside of that, it is unto its own thing, mm-hmm. and it deserves to be there. Like, okay. And as Kyle said, he thinks it is now his all-time favorite movie.
Oh, wow.
It is very something.
three hours of something.
I truly have no hard standing opinion on the movie.
Okay.
Other than I liked it, but I don't know why. Like, I've watched hours of breakdowns on this movie at this point. Like, I understand the theming and I understand what people think it's about.
Right.
But I also don't know how I feel about it.
That's fair.
It is a very conflicted movie in and of itself, and it's really fucking good. And then side complete tangent has.
Oh, not, yes.
So the Friday the 13th shirt that you bought me so many birthdays ago.
The 3D one? Or the part 3 one?
Yeah, that has the blue and purple.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the other day, my girlfriend had nothing else to wear because all her stuff was in the laundry. And so she grabbed that shirt.
Okay.
I went to work and she went off about her day. She comes back and she's like, all right, so I have a question.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, okay. And she's like, do people just ever stop you on the fucking street or something and go, yo, that's a cool fucking shirt. Or hell yeah. Like Jason Voorhees. And I'm like, yeah, all the time. That's what the horror community does. We see each other and we recognize so that it's like an affirmation that, hey, you're not alone in this hooky spooky horror shit.
Player recognizes player.
And she's like, I got way more attention than I've ever gotten. I don't like it. This shirt, people, I had 6 people today tell me that's a cool shirt or, oh, I love that movie. And no one ever speaks to me in the grocery store.
I will say it does happen to me, but it's definitely going to happen more to a girl.
Yeah.
For sure.
Oh, yeah. No,
for sure. Because I'm a 6'5" mongoloid and people are already scared to talk to me as it is. So when people are like, oh, that's a cool shirt, I'm like, thank you. But yeah, she's a girl. Is going to happen a lot more.
And she is the exact opposite stylistically of me.
Okay.
So, you've seen Deathgasm.
Yeah.
So, you know, the scene where on the park. That is us. To a T. She is very, like, office professional.
Yeah.
Like, blouses, slacks.
And you're sitting there looking like a juggalo with your fucking spike necklace.
Yes.
That's awesome.
So she goes to like pick up her prescription from the pharmacy and her pharmacist is looking at her like, are you okay?
Who are you? Yes, it does happen. I was out today in my Child's Play 3 shirt and someone was like, nice shirt. And I'm like, what am I wearing? Oh yeah. Child's Play 3. hate the movie. Love the shirt. So yeah, it does happen a lot.
Yeah,
it happens a lot, especially with like the Fright Rags cavity color shirts that are unique.
Just like, and so
like you have to go to the website to buy them.
And,
you know,
and
like,
let me just speak highly upon cavity colors and Fright Rags, y'all. Whatever y'all did to get that good at art, keep it up.
Yeah,
because that it's fucking impeccable, and the shirts are comfortable.
Oh, yeah. The shirts are very comfortable. They have a lot of great artists that work with them. So, yeah, I can't. Okay. I'll just throw a fucking shout out to Fright Rags, Cavity Colors, Terror Threads, and Gutter Garbs. Those are the four places I buy all my shirts from. Once again, that is Terror Threads, Fright Rags, Cavity Colors, and Gutter Garbs. All four of them make great fucking quality merchandise for all of your favorite horror movies. If you want to get in a conversation with someone you never wanted to in your life, grab a shirt, go out in public. People will flock to you.
They will.
It will happen. Doesn't even matter where you're at. You could be fucking at a nursing home and some lady would be like, is that Night of the Demons Part 2? Like, yes.
Is that John Carpenter's Prince of Darkness?
Why, yes, it is. God, I haven't seen a Prince of Darkness shirt, but as soon as I do, buying it immediately.
Oh, yeah.
One of the greatest. Let's get to the IMDb roundup here. Have we seen this, Corey, how many times?
Three now.
Okay, me, one time. So no, I have not seen this. This is Pulse from 2001, released on November 9th of 2005. Took 4 years to get to the U.S. That is not a joke. Rated R for some violent images. No sex and nudity. Moderate violence and gore. Mild profanity. Mild alcohol, drugs, and smoking. And severe, frightening, and intense scenes. We've got isolation, depression, loneliness, spooky apparitions, suicide, and more spooky apparitions. Weapons of choice are guns. That's it.
Because and in the end, what seems like an incandescent tube light bulb.
Yes. Yes. So, trigger warning, just in case anyone, you know, I'm just saying there is a few suicides in this. I'm going to start giving warnings about that in case you have not seen this movie, because that can trigger people if you don't know that going in. There's like three suicides, I think, in this movie, or maybe four, with that lady who jumps off the tower. Jesus. Runtime of an hour and 59 minutes, listed as a horror, mystery, sci-fi thriller, directed by Kiyoshi Kurosawa, who also directed Cure, not The Cure, I should correct that, it is just Cure, from 1997, also written by the same man who also did the screenplay for the same movie, produced by six people, none of which stood out to me, composed by Takafumi Haketa, who also composed Nothing That I Recognize. We've got cinematography by Jun Ichiro Hayashi, who also did the cinematography for the original Ringu and Dark Water. Yes, not the American remake. And then we've got
the good one,
the good Dark Water. And then we've got edited by Junichi Kikuchi, who also edited what appears to be some early 80s Japanese porn. Don't quote me, but it appears to be some very sexual material.
I will say some of these cuts were outside of regular filming. So
yeah,
if that's what he directed or if that's what he edited.
I mean, there was a title called Heavy Petting. So
it makes some sense.
Yeah.
Because I will say this is a very bizarrely put together movie.
The whole movie will make you question your existence, honestly.
Yeah.
It made me question so many things about who I am as a person. And I was like, these are things I don't want to be thinking about right now, but thank you for doing that. But yeah, a lot of his titles include women that are half dressed on the poster art. So I just kind of assumed it was some sort of porn or erotic stuff because they have, again, names like Heavy Petting. So that's what he edited. And then he did Pulse out of nowhere. We've got starring Haruhiko Kaito as Ryusuke Kawashima, who was in 30 other things I did not recognize. He does not even have an IMDb picture, so it was really hard to find some of these people and who they were in the movie, because three of these stars did not have a picture. We've got Kumiko Aso as Michi Kudo, who was also in The Ring Zero as Etsuko Kachahari. And we've got, I love this name, because it's just Koyuki. It's like Cher. She doesn't have a last name. I love this. It's just Koyuki as Haru Karasawa, who was also in The Last Samurai as Taka.
Is that
the one with
Tom Cruise?
Yeah, the one with Tom Cruise. Yeah, that one.
Oh.
Yeah, that one. We've got Kurume.
It's actually one of Tom Cruise's better movies.
Is it really?
I think so.
I've never seen it.
Really?
Does he play? He doesn't play like an Asian guy, does he?
No, no, no. Okay. So the whole
bit, I was going to say, it wasn't one of those things where they were trying to pass off a white guy as
an Asian person. So the whole bit is it's like right after the Civil War, and Tom Cruise is like an American general, and he's on like some thing to Japan, and his boat crashes, and like some aristocratic Japanese family brings him in.
And
like their clan is failing, so he comes in and he teaches the samurai American like war tactics, and they teach him the discipline of being a samurai.
Oh, okay.
And it's a whole thing. It's
okay.
He's not very Tom Cruise-y.
Yeah, which is usually with the Tom Cruise I like. When he's not running at full speed everywhere.
Yeah, no, he's much closer to like a Few Good Men Tom Cruise.
Okay, all right.
Less of Top Gun and fucking Mission Impossible.
Mission
Tom
Impossible,
Cruise.
Yeah, where he's running everywhere. Okay, all right. I can get down with that then. I would definitely have to put that on the list. Two more people here. We've got Kurume Arasaki as Junko Sasano, who was only in 18 other things that I did not recognize, and Masatoshi Matsuo, who was Toshio Yabi, and was also only in 17 other things that I did not recognize. Estimated budget of ? Could not find it. This did bring in $318,000 worldwide. It was filmed in Tokyo, Japan. You can watch this on Prime Video with AMC Plus or a $4.79 rental on Amazon, which is fucking weird. It's a very specific price. Movies that came out around the same time, we've got The Fog remake, of course, not the 1980 classic by John Carpenter. Doom, The Legend of Zorro, Saw 2, Wolf Creek, Chicken Little, Zathura, Rent, Aeon Flux, Brokeback Mountain, The Chronicles of Narnia, The Lion, the Witch, and The Wardrobe, and Memoirs of a Geisha.
Can we, have we done Doom? Can we do Doom as like a creature feature?
Sure. I can throw Doom on the list.
Because I will take anything to do the Rock B movies.
I'm down. I mean, I know it's not really a horror movie, but
it totally is. It's totally billed as a horror movie.
I mean, it's billed as a horror movie. Let's see what it actually comes in as. Oh, shit. Action, horror, sci-fi.
Yeah.
Let's go. Let's go. I thought it was just going to be an action sci-fi. I figured they would bill it more as like, you know.
No, because
it's a horror game.
They literally opened the gates of hell.
Oh, man. Let's go. I didn't know that. That would have been on the list ages ago. Oh, my goodness. Let's move down to specific horror moments. Did you have one?
Not anyone specifically, because this whole movie is just, it's so surreal that there's not any one specific moment that necessarily sticks out. The whole movie happens almost stream of conscious.
Yeah.
And to pick out any one individual moment kind of breaks up the whole tension of the movie.
I'll tell you mine when we get to it, because there was a lot of creepy ones, but there was one in... Like, there was one specifically that made me, I got goosebumps from it. And I was like, ooh, I was very uncomfortable. Favorite kill, there's really not a bunch. Like, they're mostly suicides.
Yes.
There's really not a bunch of kills. But there is one person who jumps off something very high. And I'm going to talk about it when we get to that scene, because how they filmed that blows my mind. And I can't even comprehend how it was filmed.
Plot twist, it's Japan. They just actually made some woman jump.
That's what Gabby said. She was like, that's the funny part, is they just filmed someone doing that. I'm like, that's not funny. What do you mean? What are you talking about? I didn't have a favorite character, least favorite character, or favorite line. This movie's fucking depressing.
Yeah.
This movie is so depressing. So let's just move on to the IMDb summary real quick. Two groups of people discover evidence that suggests spirits may be trying to invade the human world through the internet. Now, I'm going to set this movie up real quick, and then we can just kind of talk about it, like, not linearly, because I don't even know where to start. So let me just set this up to a certain point, and then we'll just talk about it. Like, I was writing down all these notes, and I'm like, this is the most complicated movie to explain to people. So let's just talk about what we liked, what we disliked, all that stuff. So let me just, the opening shot is someone on a boat. Remember that, because it's going to come back around. This is like a circular movie, cyclical plot. Where you start is where we end. And I was very confused. By the way, we're going to go into spoilers here. So this is spoiler territory. I was very confused by the ending, because I want to talk about that real quick. When Michi's on the boat and that older guy with the hair approaches her, I was like, have they been on the boat for 20 years? Because she's the fucking same age. And this, you know, I was like, Kawashima is much older. And then it cuts to him.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. Because I was like, how the fuck is she the same age?
See, and for a second, I thought that was Michi's dad. Because remember, there's that whole little, no, I can't face him type shit.
Honestly might have been, but they don't explain who that is.
I think it's just some boat that they found while they were...
Like a giant boat. Almost cruise ship level boat.
Well, it's like a ferry.
There we go, a ferry. That would be the best way to describe it, yeah. It's a ferry boat where Michi and Kawashima are on, except Kawashima's not there because And again, I don't even know, I don't even understand this fucking movie, because they cut to a clip of him there, and then it cuts back to just that shadow fucking image of a human, and she's like, I'm glad he's here, and I'm like, but is he there?
So
did he escape the evil? Like, well, I don't understand.
Can I give, like, a theory spoiler now? Since
no, we're doing spoilers now.
Okay.
I've gone past the point of trying to prevent spoilers.
Well, no. I mean, like, right now in this conversation.
Yeah, right now.
So,
do it.
So here was my original theory, and still my semi-working theory.
Okay.
Is because throughout the entire movie, there's pretty much no one except the characters. Now, except for a few scenes here and there. Like, yeah, there's a handful of people when the woman jumps off the tower. There's, like, a handful of students in the comp sci room once.
But it gradually goes from people
to, like,
to no people.
But there was even slightly fewer people to begin with anyway.
Yeah.
So you have this, like, surrealist. I think they're already dead. And them dissipating into the fucking mildew spot is them finally realizing, oh shit, I'm dead, and not being a ghost anymore.
Yeah.
Because the whole thing the one guy said was, why would you choose to be a ghost if there is something else out there?
And that, I think that same guy goes on to say something about how the other side has a, like, a boiling
yeah,
point,
a finite amount of room.
A finite amount of room that will spill over into this world. So maybe that all the people in that world are the people that have spilled over, and they just accept that they are dead.
And then conveniently, that guy's never fucking seen again.
He's seen for like 5 minutes in the library, where Kawashima sees that little ghost kid, and he comes up and he's like, I see him too. And I'm like, bitch, no you don't. And he's like, yeah, go chase him. And he chases him away, and then they have the conversation with the tea. He's like, well, here's my hypothesis on this. And you're like, that sounds pretty right. But then Kawashima's like, nah, fuck it, I'm leaving. But yeah, he's conveniently there just to explain that, and then never in any other scene.
Yeah, it's just gone.
It doesn't make any sense.
But he's also the grad student that made that micro simulation of our world.
Yeah, on the computer where the little dots are.
What the fuck was that?
I have been trying to figure that shit out. I was trying to figure out, how do I explain the little thing that they have on their computer screen where the dots are circling, and the closer they get, the further away they get. But the further away they get, the closer they get. What was that?
But if they touch, the little circles die.
Yeah.
Until people start disappearing, and then one specific circle can cross over all the others.
Yeah.
And, like, split itself, and it...
That's the main part of this that I really truly could not wrap my head around.
And then here's my second working theory.
Okay. Oh, you got more?
Yes.
Oh, let's go.
My second working theory is this is some massive allegory for what people were going through during the dropping of the atomic bombs.
Oh, shit.
That is, just because of that one scene after the plane goes down where she opens the door and all the people are, like, fused to the wall, there's no way that would happen after the plane exploded. So I'm thinking all of this is, like, some big allegory for the people that were able to escape from the bombings.
Bombs, yeah.
And then had, like, some survivor's guilt. And because... I don't know if you've seen the photos that are labeled the shadows of Hiroshima. It's those mildew spots.
Yeah.
It's literally that, but ashes. Like, those are, like, real photos that exist.
Oh, no.
So that was my other working theory about what this movie might be, especially because with the advancement of the internet, the people that are living in relatively a post-apocalyptic world that had nukes dropped on them are starting to see the horrors of the crimes that actually happened.
Oh shit. That has to be it. I think that's the best theory right there.
It might be, but see, then the final thing that the one boat guy says,
which was,
is
what?
we're gonna go to Latin America. There's still some signals there. We hope there's a holdout of people.
Oh yeah, he's like, let's go to South America,
which is not anything that would have happened. So that kind of slightly kills the theory. But then again, I'm thinking maybe they were trying to tie in the rest of the story as, oh, there's still signals of internet left. Because
it was also 2001. This was very early internet. Like, internet
yeah.
was internet really became popular around like 98. And then even still, like, it was for emailing.
Yeah, it was business.
Basic business thing. So 2001, that's really when, you know, we were starting to get into internet. So I also, by the way, seeing how as this is pre-Grudge, pre-Ring even, this movie was so fucking ahead of its time. And even editing-wise, like that whole scene when Michi is looking at the computer and then and all of a sudden, like, it pulls like a Saw from like Saw 2 or Saw 3 where there's like a camera behind her and she's like moving and waving around and she goes to find whatever it is in the closet. And of course, there's nothing there. But it was very well done and very well edited for its time.
And I also realized that one of the things that creates all the tension of this movie is they don't keep consistent frame rate. Like, characters will move almost quicker than natural, but then when they get to a point where they stop and speak, their motions are much slower and almost less animated. Okay. And then you'll, like, the moment where Yabe goes into the Forbidden Room for the first time. The woman is moving in slow-mo, but everything else, like, even her clothes are moving in regular time. But, like, she, and they...
Oh, that's my horror moment.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
when he walks in past the place where that lady was and goes to like this wall that like lights up.
Yeah.
And then turns around and that lady just starts doing, oh my God. I didn't know what was going on. I was like, are they speeding up and slowing down the timing? What the fuck?
No.
It was so horrifying.
What they're doing is they're having her like pantomime walking in slow motion, but it seems like they're speeding up the actual frames of the camera.
Yeah.
So it's herky jerky. It's a weird thing. You can actually, funny enough, you can see something similar to this, but not in a horror aspect on TikTok.
Oh.
When people do like voiceovers and then they speed it up to be kind of cartoonish and you see how people's head bob and jerk. It's the same thing.
It's very creepy.
Except the person is moving at slower to make it when they
appear
speed
faster,
it up.
Yeah.
So when they speed it up to make it seem normal.
Yeah.
It's a very weird thing, but if you go back and watch it, you'll notice like there's a lot of like sweeping shots that are moving just a little too quick for like a normal sweeping shot.
Okay. Yeah. All the camera work, all the editing, a lot of the acting, it's just very well done. And it's just the whole movie is very eerie. Very unsettling.
It's very surreal. Yeah. And to use a term that's been kind of fucked out recently on the internet, liminal.
Liminal.
Like
it really is.
Because everything just seems like one step removed from like people being there.
Yeah.
It gets progressively worse through the movie. The isolation just grows.
Yeah.
And like every time somebody walks off screen, it's very likely that that character's never going to fucking be seen again.
So many people, the little group of Michi, Junko, and Yabe, they're like, what happened to Taguchi? He's gone. Then they're like, what happened to Yabe? It's like everyone just keeps disappearing. Yeah. And you're like, holy fucking shit.
And disappearing with like literally no warning.
No warning. Just
like,
gone.
Like not even a lead up. No lead up. Like no kill scene. Nothing. Just
they're gone.
Yeah. They walked up the stairs of the sitcom, never to be seen again.
So real quick, let me just lay out the beginning of the movie because it is very odd. So there's a couple things that happened beforehand. Like I said, there's a scene on the boat. There's another scene, but then we're introduced to Michi, Junko, and Yabe. This is the thing I don't like about J-horror sometimes is because they don't actually introduce these characters until like 40 minutes into the movie. Cause I'm like, okay, I got one character's name. Who the fuck are you two? Introduce yourselves. And I, you know, some of them didn't have IMDb pictures, so I could not look at who they were. So it is Michi, Junko, and Yabe, and they're all wondering where Taguchi is. And they're mentioning about this disc, and if they don't have it by tomorrow, that they're going to be screwed. And one of them, who is Michi, she's like, I'll go check on him. Goes to his house, rings the doorbell, searches for a spare key, which she finds pretty quickly, enters. Taguchi is nowhere to be found. She searches for the aforementioned disc. Also, by the way, I should mention at this point, Taguchi's apartment is very weird. There is a plastic sheet dividing the apartment. Thought that was very creepy. And when you see her walk in, you can see... I saw this immediately.
I saw a silhouette too.
You can see the silhouette and you're like, that's a person, right? But it doesn't move for like 45 seconds. And the second that she pulls the plastic, you know, back, Taguchi stands up and you're like, okay, that's what I fucking thought. And she's like, hey, where's the disc, you know? And he's like, oh, it's in that pile over there. And you can also see him when he stands up. He's got something in his hands, but you don't really know.
No, he goes to pick it up. Or, sorry. He actually picks it up like an end table.
He picks it up, but he's got something in his hand, and you don't really know what it is. And he's kind of looking around, and you're like...
Oh, it's a phone cable.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So he directs her over to the pile of things, and she's like, you know, you should label your stuff. I can't find this. She's like, is it the one called work file? No answer. Calls out again. No answer. So she slowly starts approaching the room that Taguchi went into.
Oh, and so slowly.
Oh, so slowly. like slow motion. Just walking.
It takes her, like, and I timed this.
What, 35 seconds?
Takes her 48 seconds to go from where she's standing around the corner into the next room.
Yeah, because it's literally just like maybe 15 feet down and like 3 feet to the left. So she approaches the room where, you know, she pulls back the plastic and she turns to the left and Taguchi has hung himself. And that scene of like the camera, like on his face, his neck muscles were all like,
and is stretched.
Oh, stretch marks. So, oh, so my do
you,
God.
Do you see why? And obviously this came out before the Grudge, but do you see why I said it had like big Grudge energy?
Yeah.
Like it's the body malformations is very, very similar.
It's very creepy. And that was a very creepy scene that happens, you know, within the first 10, 15 minutes. And of course, police are called. She meets her friends, Junko and Yabe. They pick her up from the police station. They grab food and they're like, oh, I wondered if we could have helped Taguchi. They had no idea he was oppressed or depressed. And I was like, he wasn't depressed. He found something on the internet because I know the little subtitle of the plot here. So I knew it wasn't he was depressed. He found something on the internet. And how they go into that explanation of what they found on the internet, it's baffling, you know? It's so baffling.
So, and here's the thing, is upon my third time watching it, I don't know if it's actually what they found on the internet.
What found them?
No. So here's another headcanon theory, is it's not what they found on the internet. It's them finding the internet. It's the internet is the beast of itself creating the depression and the bad thoughts, just because now there is no privacy and like aloneness. Now you're connected to everything. That's why the theme is now you're alone, because you're disconnected from the internet.
Well, and that's the funny thing, is because Kawashima literally puts in a disc to install the internet for the first time. So, yeah, I guess that in a sense, it is just the internet, because even Haru, who Kawashima runs into at like a computer lab, she eventually comes over to like check out. Oh, because she tells him like you should try to bookmark the page that you were on, because she's very interested. She overheard him at the computer lab talking about this ghostly stuff. So she's like, you should try to bookmark it, or you should try to like, you know, screen print it. And when she comes over, they're literally talking about how, you know, everyone wants to be connected, you know, like,
yeah.
So that makes sense of what you're saying. Like, maybe the internet is just the big bad in this. It's not like, oh, they found something. It's just, oh no, the internet itself as a whole is the villain, I guess, in this movie. Cause even the reveal of the, what would you call that person thing? It's not a human, but it's not a ghost, because Kawashima grabbed.
Yeah. And he goes, like, I'm real.
Yeah. Is that just like the amalgamation of fucking the internet? Like, I don't know.
No. So what I think it is I think it was somebody in the production team said, hey, so we gotta like have something to be defeated. You can't just like, But see, and that's why he kills the thing, and then everything starts going to shit. Like, yeah, the planes fall out of the sky because now the FAA can't get in touch with him. He literally killed the internet.
Hmm.
So, yes, probably it is the physical manifestation of the internet.
I meant corporeal, not amalgamation.
Yeah.
Corporeal form of the internet.
It very much probably is, like, the physical embodiment of the internet just because they had to have something. Or else it would have been an even more depressing movie.
Yeah, because this guy at one point when Kawashima enters the Forbidden Room, the Forbidden Room is any room that has been taped with that red tape. There's a lot of doors in this movie that have been taped with red tape that you should not enter. And once you break that seal, it's pretty much game over for you. Because anyone who enters that room goes away. And the guy in there is like, forever death was an eternal loneliness. I am not an illusion. And then like gets face to face with Kawashima, who's morbidly fucking scared, and I would be too. So I don't know who that was. That's a thing sometimes that J-horror does, is they don't explain everything. But I think, like you said earlier, it's that cultural difference, that something that we might not understand because, you know, I'm an American. I don't have Japanese heritage.
Yeah.
So it might just be that cultural barrier.
Yeah, like, you know, I would very much assume that there is some sort of like urban legend mentality or something that like close to every Japanese child grows up with, so that when the scary situation is presented, you don't have to like explain. Like, here in America, we know why slashers are scary. You don't have to spend part of the movie explaining why this slasher is scary, while we do when it comes to something like a demon, especially when it comes to like a demon from like ancient Sumerian stuff. That's not cultures that we're
familiar with.
But I could probably guarantee you, if you had a similar story being told in that region, they would just go, oh yeah, Pazuzu. And then he started doing this, and they'd be like, oh yeah, that's fucking terrifying.
Yeah, I got it.
Because it's fucking Pazuzu, and they know what that shit is.
We don't know what it is.
Yeah, exactly. So it's probably just like that. There's just a impassable barrier of we cannot know.
We cannot
just
understand.
Because we didn't grow up in it.
I really do. I mean, I don't. Okay, so I'm not saying I like the theory, because I like what we did to Japan back then with dropping atomic bombs on them, because that's horrible. But that theory does make a lot of sense, especially with the what I called them like human water stains, like on the wall.
Yeah.
Every time someone died in this movie, there was just like this stain of them imprinted on the ground or the wall or whatever. So I mean, that does kind of track with that theory. And also, especially when she goes into that little boat place, and there's like skeletons that have like ash on them. You know what I mean?
Like they wouldn't have been that desiccated
right
after 35 seconds of an explosion.
Right.
They had to have already been there. So that's my thinking. Or the only thing that could do that level of damage is a nuclear blast.
Yeah, and I think the plane kind of serves as the nuclear blast, I guess, because we see a huge explosion in the background. See, this is why I'm glad I do movies like this with you, because you see things that I watched it with Gabby, and we were both just like, I don't fucking.
Well,
Gabby's usually the smartest fucking person on the show. She's like, I don't get it.
Well, and again,
I'm like, help.
But again, you have to realize this is my third time watching
it.
And I'm still just fucking pointing at the map and speculating.
And hoping you. But like, that makes a lot of sense. I can wholeheartedly say that makes a lot of sense. It's more sense than I could make of this movie. By the end of it, I was just like, Doomsday? What's going on? I don't understand. Because, you know, like I said, people slowly start getting faded out of this movie. There's, you know, a couple people here, a couple people there. When Kawashima and Haru are on that train at the end of the movie, and she's like, looks around, and I was like, there's no one here. She literally was like, where is everyone? I'm like, yeah, where is everyone? And he's like, I'm right here. Like, no. Where are other people?
Yeah.
Not you. I know you're right here. Like, where are other people? So this movie does give you a real sense of isolation, loneliness. It is kind of it's not an easy watch. So just know that going into this, it is a very depressing movie.
But also, for an hour and 59 minutes, it is very well paced.
Oh, now, yeah.
Now, I will say, there are some things that I'm like, all right, I didn't need that extra 10 seconds.
Right.
But on the flip side, they give you a whole lot more, like, establishing things to kind of almost pull your focus away.
Yeah.
And confuse you, but not in a bad, like, it's not like, oh, what the fuck, I, like, this is stupid, I don't know what's going on. It's more like a, what the fuck is going, why is this happening? But,
yeah, like, the
but
lady,
what about that? No? No. Okay, what's,
the lady who jumps off the water tower, or whatever, that random suicide,
yeah, just
we
a,
see.
Just a random woman. Not even a named character.
Not even a named character. And that whole, that, again, I wanted to mention this. I'm glad we're back around here. Yeah, there's a scene where literally you see a woman. You can see, I think it's Junko walking around, and the camera's up on this lady who's in the background very high up. And then it eventually focuses on her, and the camera follows her all the way down to the ground. And I don't know how.
And point of impact.
Yeah, and point of impact. And I don't. Like, it wasn't CG. It was not. I mean, if it was for 2001.
They had very little CG.
Yeah.
I don't
I
think
saw
they,
the CG in
I don't
there.
Think they had the budget.
No. I saw the CG that they put in there, and I was like, that's blatantly CG. That fall from the tower, I was like, okay, how?
Yeah.
How did y'all do that? So there's a lot of things in this, like that lady falling from the tower, that guy in the library, one note things, and you're like, but what about those people? It's a very confusing, very vexing storyline. It doesn't make a lot of sense. It really does. It's hard to explain, and that's why I'm kind of glad we just talked about it the way we did, because you just need to see it for yourself, and you really need to get your own interpretation of what you think's going on.
And to kind of be a theme of the stuff that you and I have been doing recently, there's not, like, a story. It's... And I know, like, oh, a series of events that happens to a character is a story. Not in this case. Like, this is literally watching the circumstances happen.
Yeah.
It's not like, this is happening because, and they're going to do this to fix this. It's like,
this is just happening
to these people.
Yeah.
And they're trying to figure it out.
And you are literally riding along with them. You're not the third person of the story. You're riding along with them for the story, not understanding as much as they don't understand. At least that's how I took it, because I was like, these people don't understand. I don't understand what's going on. I'm like, I feel like I'm a passenger in this movie.
Yeah.
I'm not like a third party perspective where I know things that they don't. I definitely don't know things that they don't. Unless-
yeah, no, it's... It is as close to first person as you can get without being in the POV.
In the POV, exactly. Without it being like found footage style.
Yeah.
So that is Pulse from 2001. You got to check this out. It is a very weird movie. It is a very bizarre movie. It will keep you guessing. It is still keeping Corey guessing on his third watch. And I guarantee I will still be guessing three watches in. So I will be right there with you. Let's go to some post-review stuff here. Taglines. I do like this tagline because they say it in the movie. It is, do you want to meet a ghost? And I, in fact, do not. But
no.
I do like that tagline. Trivia. The film's Japanese title, which is written in kanji, translates to English as The Circuit. So there's that. I don't know how that relates to Pulse, but whatever. An earlier horror film named Pulse from 1988 had a similar plot about an evil electrically powered entity, but it is not connected to this film or its 2006 Americanized remake in any way, shape, or form. Takashi Miyake, which we just did a movie on him a while back, Audition, with me and Michael, has said this is the only film that has frightened him as an adult, and I can agree with you. It is a very frightening fucking movie. And there is an Americanized remake of this film starring Kristen Bell from 2006, and fun fact, there are two more movies in this franchise, Pulse Afterlife and then Pulse 3, which stars Ryder Strong from Cabin Fever that we just did recently, who's also in Boy Meets World. So that's very fucking weird. Ryder Strong has been a very important part of this podcast for like three or four episodes. Goofs could not find anything. Rated 6.5 out of 10 on IMDb. 3.7 out of 5 on Letterboxd. Has a 76% on the tomato meter and a 60% audience score. I gave this a 4.
I gave it a 3.5.
You gave it a 3.5. Okay, yeah. So, yeah, it's like, I don't even know why I'm rating it a 4. I don't really understand it fully. And I was like, you know what? For what it was great. I was going to give it a 3.5 until I was like, you know what? For 2001... If I would have seen this in 2001, probably would have been a 4.5, because it is very well ahead of its time for being 22 years old.
Yeah, and see, for me, the only reason I didn't give it that extra half point is upon my third watch, I developed another theory on it.
Okay, yeah.
And I was like, I don't...
I don't know!
Two theories?
Okay.
You get that extra, you get that extra 0.5.
Yeah.
But if I have to guess more than three, and I still don't get the answer, you lose that 0.5.
That's fair. If this would have been your first watch, it probably would have been a 4. But yeah.
Probably.
I understand. Similar movies according to Letterboxd, we have Pulse 2006, Ringu, The Grudge remake from 2004, then the original Ju-on The Grudge, and Shudder, the American remake from 2008. Very confusing on remakes and originals. Get it together, Letterboxd. And then IMDb for the win, we have Cure, Dark Water, the original, Noroi the Curse.
Yeah.
Fucking great movie. Ju-on The Grudge.
Yeah.
And Ringu.
Yeah.
Did you find any funny reviews?
I did. I found two funny bad reviews and one funny good review.
Oh, funny. Oh, I like this. We're going to have like subgenres of funny good and funny bad. Okay, go for it.
So, this is a half star.
Oh.
From a user, J Quaze 27. And he watched this June 16th, 2023. So very recently.
Okay.
And his review says, you know how they make movies good? This movie was not made that way.
All right. Fair enough.
Another half star review.
Oh, wow.
From Farmer Tom.
Farmer Tom.
Watched January 19th, rewatched January 19th, 2023. Kept distracted with old technology and fashion.
Old technology. Listen, it's from 2001. Come on. That's funny.
Then we have a 5-star and liked status.
Ooh.
From Jasper, watched July 23rd, 2023, with the very simple review, holy fuck, this rocks, like literally fucks so hard.
Literally fucks so hard. Where is everyone finding these great reviews from? I feel like every time I bring something to the table, it's just so subpar.
You just got to be willing to like dig a little bit.
Man, I go so far with the reviews, but like I just can't seem to, like even right now, I'm just like, is there anything else that I might have missed? Is there something? But every review I find is either like lengthy or it's just not funny. It's just like they should have done this with the movie. Yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to give you mine. They're not going to be that great. It's totally fine. So... first one, but it's a good review. It's like a good rating. 3.5 from Barris Neal, watched on August 2nd, 2023. First hour was good. OML. I don't know what that means. I'm not a fucking...
Oh, my Lanta, probably.
Oh, my God.
Or On My Life.
First hour was so good. On My Life had me quivering and not in a good way. What's the good quivering? Then it got boring! Exclamation point. Unlucky slant face. Like, smrr. Like, Then we've got 2.5 from Jesse Klein. It sucks to be lonely. That's it.
Yeah, Jesse Klein. Yes,
thank you,
does.
Jesse Klein. And then lastly, from Radman69, we've got 2.5 stars. Very interesting concept. Really wish they did something with it in the first hour of the movie. I feel like they did a plenty in the first hour
of
the
movie. Yeah, they did like the entire establishing of the what the fucks. In the first hour of the movie, and then the other 59 minutes is them not resolving it. No shit. There's a lot that happens. A lot that happens, and then more happens.
So follow us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Slasher app at Frightmares Podcast. Our email is stayspooky@outlook.com. You can also follow me personally on Letterboxd at Dr. Proctor. You are
Frightmares Corey.
Booyah. Next week, me and Spencer will be back doing a movie that stars a very iconic bosomy lady from the 1980s. So until then, stay tuned and
stay spooky, you cutie patooties.